Fred Phelps, a Topeka preacher who used the word hate a lot, has been dead for more than 2 years now. But his campaign against gays and his protests at all manner of funerals continues to fascinate and disgust. In fact, a program tonight at the Kansas City Public Library will feature the author of a new book on Phelps and his Westboro Baptist Church. The book is God Hates Westboro Baptist Church, American Nationalism and the Religious Right. It examines a compelling idea, which is why hate can be at the core of any one person's spiritual journey. Put another way, how can anyone seek spiritual sustenance through another person's damnation? The book's author is Rebecca Barrett Fox, who's an assistant professor of sociology and the director of women and gender studies at Arkansas State University. She spent a lot of time at the church and has a whole lot to say about it. And Rebecca, welcome. Nice to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, it seemed to me in reading this book that you had a natural curiosity about Westboro and Fred Phelps and his campaign against gays. What was the appeal to you? What got you there in the first place?
It started actually well before I lived in Kansas. I was a graduate student at KU in the American Studies program. But before that, I lived in central Pennsylvania leading up to the year 2000. And in that time, if we go back a little bit in time, you might remember there were a lot of people who were really concerned about the end of the world. And a lot of them were coming to central Pennsylvania and buying property and building bunkers and underground houses. And some of this was coming out of the churches that I was visiting and observing there. And so I'd go to a different church on Sunday, a fundamentalist kind of right-wing churches, and they would be talking about stockpiling weapons, stockpiling generators, things like that. Of course, they January 2nd comes along, and they had to figure out a new message the following Sunday because those predictions hadn't come true. So I'd had a lot of familiarity with really right-wing churches and the politics of right-wing churches. So when I moved
How did Westboro get on your radar screen?
Well, when I came to Kansas, I was at KU, and just in public here, you see them out in public, you know? And so I'd seen them on the picket line, but I was really interested in how does this work inside the church? Are the dynamics, you know, that's the public performance, kind of what's the backstage? Why do people, what do they get out of going to a Sunday service like that? And so I decided to go and visit, and I really thought I would just be a casual observer and kind of sit in the back row and blend in. And I got in and realized that was not at all going to happen. It's a, you know, a relatively small congregation, 70 to 80 people.
So you really stood out.
Oh, yeah. And also the women there don't cut their hair ever, and they wear head coverings, and I had very short hair and didn't have a head covering either. And so I really stood out then. And what really struck me is that what I was hearing on the picket line was not all that different from what I was hearing in church. And so in church on Sunday morning, the service starts out by saying something along the lines of, God, we thank you that we're not like people outside of this church who have no hope of going to heaven. And then launches into a kind of a detailed list of who's not going to heaven and who are they going to focus on that week, who's damned to hell. And so, you know, sometimes the message is about other things as well, but that's always also there. And I thought, okay, why do you keep coming back to a church when you're just hearing about the other people who aren't like you?
Well, were you welcomed into this church? Were you an outlier? Were they suspicious of you?
Well, they get a fair number of visitors, probably mostly media, or often media, and, you know, people who are just curious. And then they also get people who are really seekers and who oftentimes come from a very long way to visit and learn from the church. And so it was unusual to have people who are not church members there. You know, some Sundays I might have been the only person who was not a church member, but, you know, other Sundays that wasn't the case. But they were very welcoming. And that's one of the hard things. You shift from a 45-minute sermon that's about, listing all the people who are going to hell and why they have no, you know, hope of going to heaven and what this church, people inside the church need to do so that they can have a hope of going to heaven. And it's very intense. And then church breaks and there's a potluck and, you know, they sing happy birthday to anybody who has a birthday that month. And they might have little presents to give to the kids. And then there's a hymn sing afterwards or they're, you know, practicing some songs. And people are very welcoming.
Well, I can just imagine, Rebecca, you going in saying, I'm a sociologist, and the members of the congregation saying, yeah, right. You know, yeah, what else is new, and who are you here spying for this week for 60 minutes or whatever it is? Yeah.
I mean, I think they'd have reason to be cautious. You know, there's been violence against the church, including during the time that I was there. I visited one day, and I think it was the next day, there was an arson against the church. So they have reason to be cautious. During the time that I was kind of regularly visiting the church. I still go back a couple times a year and visit, but I spent a very intense 6 months at the church where I was there really every Sunday. And they had to put in security cameras because there was a lot of vandalism happening. And so you can't just walk in the front door like you might be able to another church. You need to call and let them know you're coming, and they, you know, that they in some ways kind of vet you to make sure that you're a safe person.
How was that for you, spending 6 months in a church like that in this intense cauldron that you just described? I mean, that's heavy labor there, isn't it?
It is. I mean, my bigger work is on hate groups and extremist groups and religious groups. And there are probably some tactics that when you do that kind of work that you learn, just like if you're a social worker or an ER nurse or a hospice nurse, you know, there are skills that you you bring. One of my big concerns was not becoming callous or insensitive to the languages I was hearing. You know, you'd hear very foul language sometimes in the service. You know, people who you loved or even personally knew, because sometimes they would talk about local figures being called bad names. Hmm. And I never wanted to not be shocked by that or not be hurt by that, because it's hurtful. And one thing that helped with that is I was teaching at the University of Kansas, and I'd oftentimes bring students with me. And, you know, if they wanted to come, I'd throw open the invitation. If anybody else wanted to come on Sundays, I was there. And of course, for students, this is the first time they were hearing this language. So even though I might have heard it for, you know, for 10 Sundays in a row, they were hearing it for the first time and seeing the fact that they were upset. That was a good reminder.
Wow. And when you just I don't want to use the words that you heard in church that day, but they were condemning people who had crossed the line in terms of the church's thinking at some point?
Yeah, absolutely. Or mocking them, or mocking people who they felt God had punished. So oftentimes church would begin with kind of a review of Westboro Baptist Church in the news. And so they'd hold up newspapers or talk about the times, you know, then when they were, you know, profiled on the news. And then also,
that's interesting.
Yeah, it is. And that's basically how most church services would start. I mean, sometimes literally holding up the newspaper saying, this was us in the news this week.
And would they be happy with that?
Oh, very happy with it.
They'd like the attention, the publicity. Yeah.
Now, even though they would also oftentimes berate the reporters or berate the commentary, you know, they were glad to be in the news.
And just for the record, I suspect my name was part of that at some point back in the 90s.
I won't repeat what you
said. Yeah, I can only imagine. Yeah, I have sheets in my personal scrapbook at home where Fred took me on for one reason or another back in the early 90s when I was covering the state capitol, and as a direct extension, Fred Phelps and his church. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So they are concerned about being the media. You know, they want to be in the media. They're very media savvy. But they'd also in their services talk about tragedies. So local tragedies, national tragedies, and rejoicing in those things. You know, they would say
because those were examples of God's condemnation of whatever behavior the church members thought was out of bounds.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's God acting in the world.
Well, so what did you walk away from in this overarching question about, you know, why anyone would seek spiritual sustenance as a result, you know, through other people's being condemned and damned? What was the appeal for church members there?
I think it's kind of two things. One, and they're both kind of grounded in theology, but one is that kind of language, that us and them language, it circles the wagons, right? So if you begin church by saying, thank God we're not like those people outside of this church, mm-hmm. what else are you telling? What you're really telling the people in the church is, if you leave this church, you're going to be condemned, mm-hmm. and you're going to hell. That's the sign that you're going to hell.
We want to keep the membership up in the church would be maybe an economic motivation here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they want members, and they do a relatively good job of retaining members. You know, a pretty high percentage of people who are born in the church stay in the church. And, you know, that circles the wagon, that gives them that mentality. And people who have left the church have said, you know, they were told that the hottest corner of hell and the worst tortures of hell are reserved for people who know the truth and reject it. And who is that? And of course, that's ex-Westboro Baptist Church members.
How many members are we talking about?
Who have left?
Well, no, how many members would be at church on a typical Sunday morning?
Probably about 70 to 80, and probably
it's not a huge number.
No, and probably about half of those are minors. So they actually, for their size, they get a lot of work done in the world. Mm-hmm. So for a relatively small congregation. So one...
That's one reason. Yeah. You had some others there, you said.
And I think then, you know, the other one is that they would... They have a particular theology. It's called hyper-Calvinism. Sometimes that's used pejoratively. I don't mean to use it that way here. But it one of the things that it stresses is that God is sovereign in all things. And so if God is really God of the whole world, then we don't have to ask why do bad things happen to good people. They happen to bad things happen to good people because God makes them happen. And so they have a vision of God that God acts in the world. God is very active. He's not passive in the world. And that God actively punishes people. And that God punishes people because God is displeased with people or because God hates people. And so in that case, if you look at all the bad things that happen in the world, right? And so, you know, all the bad things happening in the news right now, they happen because God wanted them to happen. Mm-hmm. And so would they say, well, if you really love God, you have to even love the things that to human eyes look bad. So, mm-hmm. you know, humans experience them as bad things, but if God didn't want them to happen, they wouldn't happen. God made them happen, and because you know, God is just, if they happened, they happened for a just reason.
You said a bit ago that this thinking is grounded in theology, and even that surprised me a little bit. I thought maybe this church had, you know, had just gone off on its own in a scary direction. But you're saying there is some doctrinal foundation for
Absolutely.
What this is.
I mean, they're well situated in American religious history.
Really?
You know, what they would say, and Fred Phelps has said numerous times, was that that this church hasn't changed. What changed was America changed, and they're still preaching old doctrines. And if you go back through American history, you see similar things being preached, especially by Puritans. You know, there's a famous Puritan sermon about two young boys at Harvard, I think, who were out ice skating on a Sunday, fell through the ice and died. And the funeral sermon is basically, well, what do you think? Of course, that was God punishing these boys for, you know, for ice skating
wow.
on a Sunday.
Wow.
And so we look at that and think, oh, that's really horrible. But that's actually oftentimes been a part of American preaching, that God is active in the world, that God seeks justice, and that God punishes people. And we see it other places too. We just don't generally see it at funerals.
Hmm.
So they're not the only church that thinks this way. They just tend to be the only church that really acts this way.
We're just visiting this morning with Rebecca Barrett Fox. She has a new book out on Fred Phelps and the Westboro Baptist Church. The book is titled God Hates Westboro Baptist Church, American Nationalism and the Religious Right. And I should point out that Rebecca will be speaking this evening at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. More information on that, just go to kclibrary.org. You can RSVP to grab a seat for her presentation this evening. You know, most people considered Fred to be a madman. I'm wondering, in your view, was he? Or I didn't really know how to ask this other than, you know, you're saying there was some semblance of religious foundation that ran underneath him.
Absolutely. I mean, his religious beliefs were not coming out of nowhere. They're situated in American religious history broadly, and then certainly the Baptist and primitive Baptist tradition he saw himself as part of. That doesn't mean that there weren't also parts of personality that would have driven that. And I'm not a psychologist, so I can't offer too much insight there. And
yeah.
But there's enough external evidence in newspaper reports and interviews with other people that said he was a particularly difficult person to work with.
Pretty erratic.
Erratic, very passionate, very hardworking, very dogged and determined. But, you know, sometimes or oftentimes took those parts of his personality and kind of applied them in the wrong direction. So he was very famously, he was a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
But he was disbarred.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that it takes a little bit to get disbarred. And it was for harassing a court stenographer while she was on the witness stand. And so
brutally harassing her from just reading about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this wasn't his first case. I read one interview where somebody said being in court with Fred Phelps was like being in a knife fight. You know, he fought dirty, and I don't think that was untrue. You know, my observations with the church was Fred Phelps was as an old man, and you know, well beyond his legal career, and even as he was aging, even as he was ill, very passionate from the pulpit, very intense, intimidatingly so, and. You know, he would be in the pulpit sometimes and he'd demand a verse and a verse from the Bible, and he'd point to somebody or call in somebody from the audience, and they needed to know that verse. And so it kind of intensity there, but also outside of sermons, very tender, particularly with his grandchildren who loved him. You know, they called him Gramps, and people in the church who were kind of younger and even if he wasn't their grandfather, would call him that. Every Sunday after church, his grandchildren would flock to him and want to be with him. And I saw him treat his wife with also the same kind of tenderness.
You know, it's interesting because some of the folks listening here who are familiar with Fred are going to be thinking, you're presenting such an even-keeled journalistic view of Fred Phelps. And folks out there listening are going to say, you know, they know what kinds of signs he raised on Topeka street corners and Kansas City street corners for so many years. They're going to be thinking, you're giving him way too much of a break. Yeah. He was nuts. That's what they're thinking.
And I could see, I don't discount that at all. I think, if anything, I think that showing that there are multiple sides to a person and in different contexts, he can act differently with different people. He saw himself, when he was at church, he saw himself as surrounded by people who were elect. These are God's chosen people. So, of course, he would probably interact with them differently than a world that he had created as entirely evil, depraved, hellbound. So you would expect two different sides to that. And I think if anything, I hope it gets us thinking about people who do bad things are generally not all bad people, which means that lots of people who are also good people have the ability to do very, very bad things as well.
Talking about Fred Phelps and the Westboro Baptist Church, the new book, God Hates Westboro Baptist Church, American Nationalism and the Religious Right. If you want to join our conversation, we have a few minutes left with Rebecca. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. You have described the church as akin to Noah's Ark.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, this is how the church sees itself, too, and it's a theme that here in preaching. So if you're familiar with the story of Noah's Ark, right, Noah builds this ark during a long period of drought, and the idea is, you know, everybody laughs at him, everybody says he's wrong, but then the rain comes, and he puts himself and his wife and his little family on this ark. They float away to the safety, and the rest of the world is destroyed. And so Westboro Baptist Church had said, you know, they are the world's only hope. If you are chosen and if you are elect, you need to get to this church, get on board. And in so that metaphor kind of drives, you know, their sense of, again, inside outside, kind of, you know, circling the wagons, rallying people to the congregation. And it also allows them to absorb the losses. When people leave the church, as sometimes happens, they could say, look, Noah's Ark only had 8 people on it. And if you believe that story literally, those 8 people repopulated the whole world. And God was willing to destroy the entire world and save only 8. And so at the end, maybe God will destroy everybody but save Westboro.
Now, most of Fred Phelps' own kids stayed with the church, again, going on what you've written here. But a few of them bolted and left and have never returned. Tell us about that dynamic and how that's affected the family.
That's a good question. So he had 13 children. 9 of them remain in the church. It's a pretty good rate. And if you put it next to other religions, they're doing really quite well on retention. Those who left, left at kind of different points in their lives. They had 2 daughters who have left and who remain in Topeka, and then 2 sons who left. And generally speaking, when people leave, they leave in that 18 to 22 range.
Yeah.
Which is a time when, if you think about it, all of us are kind of breaking free of our parental identities, exploring ourselves as young adults, you know. So it's probably not surprising that that's when it happened for a lot of folks. And they leave and talk about abuse, absolutely. You know, Fred Phelps had 13 children and he and his wife Margie had 13 children over a long period of time. The younger children have stayed. So those who have left have been kind of from the older set of children.
Has the abuse been confirmed in court findings, or what do we know about that?
Well, there are definitely court records, but they're against minors, so they're hard to get a hold of. Mm-hmm. And what we hear, I think, is from his younger children, is a vision of their father that seems at odds with the description that the older children give, which would make sense. A lot of times when you've got kids over 20-some years, you're a different parent than when you start and when you finish. I think the accusations of abuse from the older children make sense. They've been confirmed in lots of different ways, lots of different interviews. And even his older children who stayed in the church will say things very delicately. They don't want to embarrass their father, but they'll say, you know, how he parented then wouldn't be acceptable now.
Huh. You go to Alex from Overland Park. Alex, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. A couple of minutes ago, during the discussion, it was mentioned that, you know, Mr. Phelps could be very tender, and that, you know, we should think about this. We should consider that people have different facets in their lives, and it made me think of something I learned fairly recently, that Fred Phelps was actually a civil rights lawyer earlier in his legal career. Did the guest have a chance to do any research into that aspect of his life?
Hmm. Yeah, I think this is just one of those big paradoxes, and I'm glad you, Alex, that you put those two pieces together. He was a civil rights litigator. When Fred Phelps came to Topeka, it was because he had been called as a pastor by another Baptist church, and they wanted to do a church plant, start a new church in the Westboro neighborhood, and he was called to do that. And so he came to Topeka for that, but he says providentially he arrived right when Brown versus the Board of Education was being decided.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that was God's calling to him, that he needed to go into law and he needed to pursue civil rights. And he did some important work in civil rights. Now, some people will say, and I think that this is a believable argument, that some of this may have been opportunistic. There were not white lawyers really working on behalf of black citizens. There was in Topeka, there was a really big market there for him. But he also took high-risk cases, cases where, you know, if he didn't win, he certainly was making a lot of enemies. Mm-hmm. And his work earned him a lot of respect among African-American Topekans. He won awards from the NAACP, regional NAACP, for his work. And he won cases.
You go to Byron from Midtown. Byron, you're on Up to Date.
Oh, hi. I wondered, with such vitriol that Fred Phelps felt for homosexuals, if perhaps he wasn't suppressing his own homosexual tendencies.
That's interesting. What about that aspect of him?
It's a question a lot of people ask. And certainly when we look at more broadly at Christian preachers, we know some high-profile Christian preachers who, you know, preach very strongly against sin, is how they would say it. And then we look and we see, you know, them fall, and not just Christian preachers, but right-wing politicians. And I don't see any evidence of that. I don't think there's any physical evidence of that. I think one different explanation might be, by the time he was disbarred, there was a lot of anti-abortion politics going on. Mm-hmm. And in particular in the 90s, a lot of anti-abortion politics going on in Kansas. And maybe if he is attempting to carve out a space for himself as a public figure preaching its morality, then abortion didn't need to be addressed. But sexuality, there was still room for another kind of voice in arguing about sexuality.
Just quickly, mm-hmm. is the church still going?
Yep, absolutely. They're going to picket this weekend at Gwen Stefani at the Lead Center. So, yes.
There they go.
Yep.
Rebecca Barrett Fox is the author of God Hates, Westboro Baptist Church, American Nationalism and the Religious Right. She speaks this evening at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Central Branch at 14 West 10th Street. More information, kclibrary.org. Rebecca, thanks very much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.